This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
94.9, you're listening to Saturday Magazine, Macca and Carol with you.
Indeed you are. Now we're going on a journey, and it's not, you're not listening to detours. You are listening to Saturday Magazine, and the journey we're going on is with Michael Try. Now, Michael reads the news and does all sorts of stuff, but you're going to tell us a whole lot of things about you, and I'm going to probe deeply.
Oh, good God.
Something to look forward to.
Yes. But you're a singer as well. Tell us about that, Michael. Welcome to Saturday Magazine.
Good morning. Thank you.
Nice to be here. Are you going to sing for us?
Are you a Melbourne boy, actually?
Yeah.
I'm actually a Sydney boy.
Oh.
But when I say that, that's only 5 years. I was born in Sydney. Finney, if we got any Sydney viewers, I'll say I was born in the Shire.
Okay. Oh. Well, people could be listening online at joy.org.au.
Thanks to the Lord of the Rings, that's actually the Sutherland Shire where that is. So if you know Cronulla, Sutherland.
Yep, nice, so like that.
Yeah, it was a lovely area.
So your parents came to live in Melbourne and brought you to Melbourne?
Eventually, but actually we lived in Sydney for 5 years and then moved to Brisbane.
Oh God, you've been around.
You went the wrong way.
It was actually my father was involved in opening some factories so around Australia. So we moved to Brisbane for about 10 months. And my main memory of Brisbane would be, do anybody remember Slate, writing on Slate?
Yes, it's a distant memory, yes. Michael. It's a very distant memory.
This was Brisbane back then. They were still using Slate.
You aren't joking, aren't you?
No.
I remember it, yeah.
Oh, I can tell you, I got in trouble from a teacher once because I ran out of room on my slate board, so I rubbed everything out. She wasn't happy.
I thought you had to go to Sovereign Hill to write on slate. I did. I don't. That's amazing.
That was Brisbane for you back then.
All right. Well, we won't ask how old you are, but would you like a hand down the stairs when you leave?
Oh, yeah. It feels like it. And then after Brisbane, we moved to Perth. So all the way across the other side of Australia.
So you're doing a...
So you're circumnavigating.
Anti-clockwise.
Yes, absolutely.
I hope Adelaide was mixed.
No, we bypassed Adelaide.
Well, some people do.
My main memory of Perth, we lived in Scarborough, which was beautiful. Okay. But all I can remember is sand dunes getting to the beach. I don't know if they're all there now, but...
No, they've probably got apartments on them.
But it was absolutely beautiful. And then we came to Melbourne.
So how long have you been in Melbourne?
Since 71.
All right. So you were still a young person when you came to Melbourne.
Yeah, I was about 7 years of age when we arrived here. So
you really didn't stay in the other places all that long.
No, only about 10 months in both Brisbane and Perth, yeah. Mm. Not very long.
So what were the factories that your dad was opening?
It was to do with actually making sticky tape.
Oh.
Mm, it was called General Paper Industries, something that's long gone.
Long gone, yeah.
Yeah, so he was sort of in charge of opening the new factories around here. And when we came here, we lived in Westall, South Clayton, and the factory was actually in Broadmeadows.
Oh,
so you can imagine travelling travelling to Broadmeadows from South Clayton every day was quite a trip.
Yeah.
So
you did most of your schooling and everything in Melbourne, in actual
fact? Yes. Yeah. I did the years of primary and some early years in Westall. And then my mother died when I was about 12, and then my dad remarried when I was 14, and then we moved to Box Hill. And I went to a lovely school called Blackburn High, which was,
I know where that is.
Yeah, it was a great school. Luckily lived in the area, so didn't have to, you know, audition to get in or anything like that. So that's where I did most of my growing up.
And you're a singer.
Mm-hmm.
Did you sing at school?
In the final years of school, yes. I actually learnt the saxophone for a little while. And as a saxophone player, I'm a much better singer. Okay. But I used to quite sound like a dying cow, but anyway.
So what was the interest in the saxophone? I mean, were you sort of into jazz or...?
No, actually, it was my father liked the saxophone, so I probably think in the long run I was probably doing it to please him.
Bit of political capital build up.
Yeah.
So it's a fabulous instrument.
It is. It was a great instrument, actually. And I was actually part of the Blackburn High Concert Band, which is a very, very successful group and things like that.
Even with you in it playing the saxophone?
Yeah, yeah, even with me in it. Yeah, you know, two to note here and there, you know, didn't have to play a lot.
So singing.
But singing, yeah. A friend...
What did you... do you recall... Not perhaps the first thing you sang, but the first thing you'd like to think you successfully sang.
Oh, God. I'm not too sure about that. I used to actually imitate people I hear on the radio and some of the opera singers.
Mm-hmm.
And they used to go, oh, I can do that too. No, but I never took it seriously until a friend actually at school heard me just humming away or singing away something. And she said, you should join the choir. And that's basically where it started from. And I joined the senior singers there at the high school and started off as a bass.
Mm.
And then I moved on, when I left high school, moved to the Melbourne Youth Choir. And eventually somewhere down the track sort of progressed to tenor in that because the bass lines were too boring to sing.
Right. So, my knowledge of music is very limited. I wasn't aware that you could progress as, you know, I thought if you were a bass, you're a bass, and if you were a tenor, you were a tenor, and that it wasn't something you could move around.
Not normally, but what happens is people, until they have some singing lessons, perhaps don't find their true, where their voice actually sits. Joan Sutherland is a perfect example. She was actually singing mezzo stuff until Richard Bonning came along and said, what are you doing singing down there? And suddenly transformed her into one of the world's most famous coloraturas.
Mm.
But she wasn't singing that material when she, you know, first began. And I guess that it just started to feel a bit more comfortable in that particular range.
And more exciting and less boring too.
Oh, yes. Well, tenors get the most strange things to sing, I can tell you. If you think of four-part harmony, the sopranos get the tune, the basses get the bass of the chord, so they sing that. The altos get the repeated notes all the time, and we get what's left.
Right.
And it's usually up here, down there, but it's all over the place. So,
when you say, you know, you sounds like you've been in a few choirs.
Yes.
What sort of music do you prefer singing?
I was trained classically, so I have always sung in the Melbourne Youth Choir, the Fagermott Singers, so they're both classical repertoire. And then I moved into doing some Gilbert and Sullivan for a while with a few amateur groups.
Mm.
And in fact, I'm still with one called the Gilbert and Sullivan Society at the moment, and we're actually rehearsing a show for the moment called The Arcadians, so I'm you know, flat bang in the middle of doing all of that as well. That's actually not Gilbert and Sullivan, but it's Talbot and Monckton, who were sort of like the successors to Gilbert and Sullivan in a way. It's about 10 years after that period, and it's a wonderful show.
Where do you put the shows on?
Normally at the Alexander Theatre in Monash.
Oh, Monash, yeah.
Yep. This one will be at Malvern, though. So, that was sort of like most of my training.
Mm.
So, because I'm classically trained, I actually went and did a degree years later at the Melba Conservatorium.
Okay.
So that, and I love opera. Opera is one of my great loves, even though people might find it hard to understand because it's never usually sung in English anyway. But to me, that's sort of like the pinnacle of singing.
Mm.
To sing a role in opera, you've got to be as fit as an athlete who runs a marathon, really.
Because it's the breathing, isn't it?
Yeah, because you're going to be on stage for 2 hours, 3 hours.
Oh, absolutely.
In a Wagner opera, it could be 4 hours.
Yes. Yeah.
So you've got to be internally, you've got to be so physically fit because you've got to be as fresh from the moment you start as to when you finish. Really.
So tell us, who have you, give us some names or some that you've worked with that, and then tell us a little bit about them if you can.
Oh.
if you're able.
Well, tell you what, why don't we leave that as a little teaser?
Okay, so, yes. He's going to have a think.
Yeah, you can have a bit of a think, and we'll just have a little bit of other sort of information. But we're speaking with Michael Try, and Michael's going to... he's going to blow all the... there you go. I get around, and we're not really talking about Macca. We're
No. I don't get around.
we're on Joy 94.9, and it's Saturday Magazine with Macca and Carol. And our guest this afternoon, who's doing a journey with us, is Michael Try. Michael is a Joy newsreader, but also he's a singer, and he's a Melbourne boy, we found out, and he's been singing in a variety of choirs and classically trained, and Now, Macca, just before we had that little interruption, which was the Beach Boys, Macca said to you, okay, who have you sung with? You know, where, give us the gen, give us the all the dirt on whoever you sort of you know about. So
we want names.
Can we just throw it open to you there, Michael, for the next 20 minutes or so?
Boy, what a list. No. well, actually, one of the funniest things I was ever involved in was back in 83 when I was in the youth choir, we did a concert for Charlie and Di, the Royal Gala concert. I've often referred to it as the Royal Gala concert because it had quite a few mistakes that occurred in it. But we sang one number with Marsha Hines.
Okay.
And it was Many Rivers to Cross. And I have to tell you, one beautiful person.
Oh, look, love Marsha.
Lovely.
She's a good friend of Joy. Yeah. And, she's...
One beautiful person.
She's beautiful.
She was so good to us. And the number that we did, we were all dressed in these robes and we had this little torch. It was actually a little penlight sort of thing that we were to go up on stage and we sang a few oohs and ahs and then we departed, basically. But they decided that they wanted to use the dry ice, but they went a little bit overboard. And as we're trying to walk up the stairs in the dark, the stairs just sort of disappeared. And we eventually got on stage because I thought I was going to go arse overhead in this robe anyway, but luckily it didn't. And we did our thing and departed. But when I watched it back on television, it was so funny. Marsha Hines just disappeared. It was just that much smoke. You couldn't see anything. It looked so funny.
And she's pretty dark.
Yeah. Blended into the background and it just disappeared totally. It was really funny. Don Lane was also on that performance. He was with the deaf choir doing all that signing.
Of course. Yep. Yeah.
Yep.
Another fantastic person. I didn't actually think much of Don Lane at that time. But he was so good to us. He was there a whole time talking to us, encouraging us, everything. Just really great. Mm. I was really, really surprised. And, of course, Peter Allen was performing as well. Didn't have a great deal of interaction with him, but he was really great to us. Fantastic performer. I think he was singing some song and he'd only just flown in, I think, that day or somewhere the state. So he was jet-lagged and everything like that. Did this performance, missed a note somewhere, and I think he quipped to the audience that he'd left that note over in the Pacific somewhere or something like that. And we all got on stage for the finale with for him doing I Go to Rio and this sort of stuff, but it was a bit tacky, really. There was girls running on with big bananas. And there was these two girls hanging from the ceiling and they were terrified because they were saying, get us down, get us down.
They're going to fall on someone. Or...
It was the funniest thing.
Who stage managed hanging from the ceiling?
I don't know. Maybe they don't have a job anymore, but it was just so badly put together.
Mind you, you did say it was the 80s, didn't you? I do sometimes wonder about the 80s. I think in terms of we talk about the 70s as not being an era of good taste, you know, with orange and lime green and stuff
there's nothing,
like that.
Oh, yes. There's nothing wrong with orange.
Oh, God, here we go. No, Macca, there isn't. I love your shirt.
It was great, though. I've got it on videotape, so I've got to sort of keep it forever, I reckon, because there was one part at the end of it where they were waiting for Charlie and Di to do stuff, and they went to John Michael Housen down.
Oh, John Michael was there too.
Yeah, in some area. And something happened, and it just went silent, and his face turned as sour as anything. And I don't know what happened with someone stuffed up again. It was so funny.
We'll have to make a note of that, Carol.
You have to watch it.
We're going to have to ask him.
Something happened. I don't know what happened, but he just faced.
So did you meet Charles and Di?
No.
Oh, there wasn't any,
Terribly disappointed about that.
No laying on of the hands or anything. Jesus.
They met our choir master, but I believe a few of them managed to escape from the basement where they were told that there actually was nothing down there, but the Melbourne Youth Choir was down there, but nobody believed that.
Who'd put them?
Don't go down there. There's nothing down there. But we're down here.
Who'd put children in the basement, for goodness sake? Yeah, of course not.
But I believe a few of them did escape and actually did manage to get to meet them. I mean, I would love to. I mean, can you imagine having said you met Di?
Mm.
Yeah, but didn't happen. But so that was one of the things. We sang for Barry Manilow
I like that bit, though. Did you notice that? He said, fancy being able to say you've met Di. Bugger Charles.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Who's mentioning Charles? You know.
Well, you know, I don't think it's high on a lot of people's list, but Di would have been.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Then again, you know, I mean, you know, he's an interesting chap, I suppose.
Yeah. We also had Barry Manilow.
Good Lord.
We performed with him at his concerts. We did a song called One Voice with him, but hardly did anything with him in rehearsals. It was his musical director. You know, a lot of them have musical directors, so you work with them.
Mm.
And then eventually we got to sing one rehearsal with him, and then it was it. We were on stage.
Mm.
Other things, I've sung with Carols by Candlelight.
So
you get to meet a few of the stars there. The singers are a funny lot. They can be, you know, a bit temperamental at times.
No.
No. There was one singer, I don't think I should say a name, but there was a little song called The Drummer, Little Drummer Boy, and the poor little drummer boy wasn't quite getting it right. And this singer was overheard to say some sort of bad comment about get it right or something like that. And the whole choir just went, because everybody heard this comment. This was in rehearsal. Mm. And it's like, and that sort of taints you a little bit with how you view somebody. And it's not the only time they've ever had some controversy either.
It's interesting because, look, I have always found that the people that are not particularly pleasant or seemingly, how can I put this? How about just up themselves?
Mm-hmm. What about Patsy?
Perfect.
Yeah. Are usually the ones that don't have any what you'd think of a right to be that way. You know, they're not, in fact, probably the best at what they're doing themselves. And yet those that are really good, those that are really got something, are usually the nicest people. Mm,
that's right. Yeah. One of my director from the show I'm doing now, he used to dance with the Australian Ballet, as choreographed for Australian Opera and everything. And he said people like Domingo are the most beautiful people. You know, there's nothing in them that would be, you know, horrible or anything like that. And here they are, you know, they're superstars.
Yeah.
So,
Can you play tennis?
Adrian, yes, I can, Adrian.
Can you play tennis, Adrian?
Adrian is works here. Adrian also volunteers here at Joy.
Yes.
He's around where
he is. He's not looking at you, is he?
No. Oh, he's the funny. It's the funniest thing, if I've got time to tell you that story, is we played tennis for many, many years, and it's funny, we turned up one day and here's Adrian working behind us. What are you doing here? What are you doing here? All that sort of stuff. And when I moved out of home, Adrian and I shared a flat, and my stepmother had a little bit of a problem with me being gay. And
a little bit of a problem.
Yeah, just a little bit of a problem.
We'll come back to that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And anyway, the first question she ever asked me was, "Is he funny?" And I just looked at her and said, "I don't know what his sense of humour is like." She couldn't say the word.
Oh, I see.
Is he funny?
Is he funny?
I went, okay. You can't even say that. So that was very. It was a very interesting moment when she said that. I just went, "Oh dear."
So how you say your stepmum wasn't sort of particularly enthralled by your sexuality. What about your dad?
Neither were. My dad, before he was this company where we moved around, obviously worked as a projectionist. And their image of gay men, I don't know about lesbians, but gay men, were these men who used to sit in picture theatres with paper bags. Sitting on their backs, you know.
Yeah.
That was there. That was what they knew. That's all they seemed to know about that. But, so,
and they're probably not gay men at all.
No, right. That's the thing.
Yeah. Or even the, you know, how they were portrayed on film in movies as, you know, a particular, perhaps flamboyant.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
yeah.
Yeah, so that was where they came from and they had no other notion. So, of course, for them that was a bit of a shock, but they've got over it.
Still around, both of them?
Yeah, well, they're divorced now, but my father lives in New South Wales, and I'm very good friends with my stepmother here, actually.
Okay.
Always go to Christmas, and I have a good friend of mine is my best friend, not my partner or anything, but we always go there for Christmas and things like that as well. So the whole family is...
So she got over it eventually.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we go there for dinner.
She become a fag hag?
No, quite. We haven't gone that far. I don't think we'll ever go that far.
So it sounds as though when your father did remarry, that you actually became close to your stepmother as a child. Did she take over as a sort of surrogate mum for
you? No, from the first moment she did say that she wanted to be my friend, not my mother, which is fair enough because she wasn't. And that's fine. Mm. That's fine. Yeah, we got along.
You must have been, what, about nine?
I was 14 when they remarried. Right. Yeah. Yes, I was 12 when my mum died and then 14, when we remarried.
Mm, well, I suppose that's an old enough. I was thinking you were a bit younger and I was thinking that, I guess at 14 you probably don't want another mum.
Mm. I had to grow up pretty quickly too when you lose your mum and you have to do things. And
So it's a question I'm always interested in. A few of my friends where one of the parents has died and there's been a remarriage, as it leads up to, you know, as the parent meets another or gets a new partner and, you know, then, okay, we're going to get married and stuff. How did your dad tell you this? Or, you know, you realise, okay, he was seeing someone else, but how did he broach it with you?
Well, actually, I'm trying to remember, but I think the first time I ever met Jane was at my 14th birthday party.
Oh, so your dad brought her along?
Yeah, and
did she bring you a prezi?
Not that I remember.
Oh, there you go.
I got one of those cassette recorder things for my 14th birthday, which is still sitting in the garage somewhere now. I can remember taping her all the time or something like that. So I was obviously being a brat or something. But that was the first time I ever met, and I think it was all fine. I didn't have much of a problem or anything like that.
Sounds like you had more of a problem later when you came out to them. How old were you when you came out?
Well, I was outed in a way, really, when I was 19. Oh. My stepmother found a card somebody had sent me on the premise of looking for a pencil in my desk. Mm-hmm. So look what happens when you go snooping. And it was a birthday card from somebody I had met who was overseas at the time, and it had love from so-and-so. Mm. And, of course, that triggered all the questioning.
Mm. Mm. So you were happy to say, well, yes, I
well, okay. Yeah.
Well,
there was no point denying anything or something like that. Mm. There was quite a number of rocky years following that until I eventually just laid down the law in a way and said, you know, this is who I am, accept me. I still want to be part of this family, but if not, it's up to you sort of thing, you know. Mm. Then the tears flowed and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think you get to a point where you just had enough, and you listen to these stories that I was saying before about all these youth with their coming out stories and everything like that. It's really hard at first because a lot of people are afraid of rejection.
Mm. Mm.
And, you know, it's the biggest thing.
Well, they don't know how the parents or the friends are going to react. And, I mean, this is where the, you know, these projects in schools is really important you know, that might be perhaps the only safe place the only place that, you know, the kid who's coming out can feel comfortable.
Yeah. Were you still at school when you recognised that you were like?
I was in primary school when I recognised. Yeah. I didn't know what a word for it was at that particular time. I just knew that I liked men and I liked the look of men, and and then it sort of just, yeah, keep going from there, really.
I think going back to what we were talking about earlier this morning, I think there's a lot of people that do not recognise how early people start thinking about their sexuality or start realising what their sexuality is.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that is one of the reasons that so many people are so against taking this sort of stuff into schools.
Yeah.
But I think most of us, at least probably had inklings of the fact that we were different at much, much younger ages than anyone would ever have imagined.
Yeah, I did. I didn't know exactly what. I didn't know the word for it or anything. Mm. I just knew that I wasn't as interested in girls as I was in guys or boys at that time.
Mm.
So, but yeah, it takes a long time to sort of, I guess, your first part of coming out is coming out to yourself. You were acknowledging who you are, and then you let the rest of the world know. I don't have a problem at work. It's great at work.
So work-wise, what are you doing now?
I work for the government
Oh.
in the tax department.
You're not singing.
The government. Yes. The government.
But it's good there. In fact, in my team there's three gay boys, so that's quite good, actually. We have a really great team. So,
do you find that in the stuff that you're still doing with choirs and singing and stuff, do you meet a lot of gay men in that sort of, you know, I guess we all have this little bit of a...
hospitality in the entertainment industry.
The entertainment industry being sort of perhaps a little bit, having a few extra gays and lesbians than some other industries. It's a bit like being a Qantas steward. We all sort of think about, certain jobs, but... But is it true? I mean, is that the case?
Well, I was in the Australian Opera Chorus for about 7 years here in Melbourne, just as a casual. And definitely you'd have a lot more gay guys being involved, but still weren't, like, we weren't the majority or anything like that. You know, you're still a minority, but you're a far more noticeable minority, and it was much more freer. You could be who you were. It didn't matter and anything like that. And it was expected. It didn't matter. And, I mean, you've got... your directors and your designers and all of that. Mm. So, you know, that's the thing. With the amateur world, it's a little bit, but not as much.
Mm.
Definitely not as much. The production I'm in at the moment, there's a few gay boys in this one, which is quite good.
Yeah.
We have a lot of fun. But again, we're not the majority or anything like that as far as this show goes. But
having that sort of extra support, though, as a, say as a teen in choirs and doing the sort of stuff that you were doing, do you think that actually helped you with your coming out and with your sexuality and accepting for yourself who you were?
Yeah, it was when you're in an environment, that which is accepting and that it's a lot easier to. Just be who you are.
Mm.
You don't have to hide. You know, you don't lead. You don't have to be leading the double life. You're there leading one life, and then you go home and you're leading another. And you've just got to get to the point where you realise, no,
there's only one life to lead.
Mm. It's like you had your family doctor, and you go to your gay doctor. You had that, and eventually, I just got rid of the family doctor, and my gay doctor is my doctor for everything. You know, not just for those particular issues or anything like that anymore. Mm. So, whereas the family doctor, they tried to convert you. Mine did.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Didn't work.
Mm. No, obviously.
Strangely enough. look. Well, it's about time that we sort of finished up, actually. But we do thank you for coming and giving us your story, Michael. Are you reading news tomorrow, by the way?
I am. I'll be back here in the morning.
Okay.
Are you doing news during Allegro?
No, I won't be.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation. Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.